I'd like to talk to you more about alchemy, about his alchemical work. But before we do that, can we go back and just touch on the horoscope of Islam in the astronomical, astrological section of things? Because that's too interesting to pass up.
Yes. Well, the astrological treatise is divided in three parts. We can divide it in three parts. In the first part, Stephanos refers to the book of the ancient wise men, books on scientific initiation through astronomy, and explains the introductory method. Introductory method means astrological method, etching to them. And among other things, he also tries to offer to his readers a clear understanding through the eventual and possible configuration of stars, which means the which God gave to us to use like a prophetess. Well, this is a treatise addressed to his student Timotheus. Okay. The author points out that all natural phenomena and changes observed in the world, as well as all political, social events and status in the society, depend on God. In other words, everything depends on the will and energy of the Creator, God of all, to whom also alone belongs the creative causality. And he says that God uses the stars and their motion as simple instruments, although he could make all this without them. And he asserts also that perfect and true knowledge belongs to God, while men making conjectures on the basis of the elements and the stars in part know and in part predict. Consequently, our knowledge is not always accurate, and so it's restricted and subject to failure. And this means that he was a very pious person, and we see this also in his lectures in alchemical work, because every lecture begins and ends with a prayer. I have studied all these prayers, and I have found that they are very much influenced by the words of early Christian fathers. This is in the first part. In the second part, the author explains why and when he cast the astrological treatise, and then gives a general description of what has happened. He says that he was in the school's small garden. This means, as ecumenical teacher Stephanos, he had to teach in the imperial school of Constantinople. They were Pandidacterion. He was there, small garden, with his students when Epiphanius, a merchant who had just arrived from Arabia Felix, visited him. Upon entering, Epiphanius requested that Stephanos order one of his disciples, students, to suspend the astrolabe and determine the ascending degree of the ecliptic, the ascendant, the planetary positions, and the cardinal points of the horoscopes. These are the most important parts of a horoscope. Because of the importance of the news Epiphanius was about to report, this means that it was a horoscope of Katarchein, of when an energy begins, when an act.
Yeah, a catharchic horoscope, yeah.
And Stephanos ordered his Sophronius to do so. And while Sophronius was busy suspending the astrolabe and calculating the hour, Epiphanius began his narrative regarding the appearance and activity of Muhammad in Arabia. And this is the reason it is said that is the horoscope of Islam. The astronomical elements said is that Epiphanius visited Stephanos on Tuesday, five thought according to the Egyptians, in the third hour. Third hour, it's seasonal hour, depends upon the duration, the length of the...
And the day and night.
Day in relation to the right. hours of the night. So, and this means that corresponds to the 1st September 621, Constantinople, 8 in the morning, 55 minutes local time. And the third part is then about the events that will take place during the dominion of this nation, and especially during the reign of its future caliphs. And my opinion is that it's written by Stephanus, and some copyist or some astrologer in the 9th century has corrected all these predictions regarding the caliphs that have reigned until then, and leaving all other work untouched.
So it's a composite text. It's in your reading. It's a prediction from the 7th century, reacting to this new political player on the scene, the Arab caliphate, saying what's going to happen, and then someone in the 9th century in the period when the East Romans are sort of getting their act together again and trying to recover some of the knowledge they've lost, comes up and says, okay, well, this didn't quite work out exactly as it should have, so I'll just correct a few things to make it fit the history and make it a better prophecy.
I think that the predictions for caliphs until the 9th century, they have been corrected, actually, because after it are more generally so on. But I think it's not logical, actually, not rational to think that in the 9th century, some author has composed such a work only to put some predictions for the caliphs.
Right.
Why the first part? Why the second part? All this, which is extensive, really extensive, only to have at the end of this. It's not logical. After almost 300 years.
Right. Yeah.
It's funny.
Yeah. I mean, could one... What do you think of this argument? The predictions made by Stephanos weren't tampered with in the 9th century. They were just completely accurate. And he just predicted with... He is such a great astrologer that he was able to predict the Abbasid Revolution and, you know, Baghdad and all this political stuff in detail in the 7th century, because that's how good he was.
Well, I don't know if he could give such, because I have read naturally, because he said he will be of the same family and he will be good looking or so. So I think these are very special characteristics.
They feel post-event.
So I think he could write some more generally. Mm. And someone would like in the 9th century elaborate a little more,
right,
knowing some things. And I also found that the astrological treatise has some relation to alchemical work. Other scholars think, for example, that it is this part is written in order to be more likely that Stephanos of Alexandria wrote this, composed this work. But I think, why? I think that he was right to remind his students what he had taught, and not another author to write all this in order to put the name of Stephanos in his work. So He reminds to his student Timotheus and other students that I have elucidated everything I taught you and your fellow listeners, my students, by circumscribing it within the limits of philosophy and clarifying it through theories so that it be accurate and truthful, not through persuasion, wrote by the elegance of words, but through natural and an exceptional sequence. I mean, the Platonic method of reasoning, Aristotelian physiology, geometric deliberations, arithmetic proportions, musical repetitions, the alchemical allegories and impenetrable processes of thought, the astronomical critical points in human life, and the notorious astrological predictions, the Ptolemaic syntax and his practical enchantments. I should point out here that in the alchemical work, there are passages on physiology. They are also on geometry and arithmetic, because we have the secret name of the philosophers, which is with three and so on. Musical, also he has something like that. Alchemy. And another passage that not only these and other such animals have had such a birth, but also many other forms are produced by putrefaction, according to the differences of species and the position of the stars, such as the metals, for example, gold, silver, copper, iron, and lead, the different stones, and whatever is like them. Those of us who remember understand the process of their birth well. He talks on putrefaction, which is the most important in the alchemical work, and all this. So I think that it is of Stephanos, and I believe that after this work, Stephanos possibly was not more alive, because if he had to be renowned in Alexandria before being invited, he should be at least 45 years old.
Yeah.
At least.
Yeah.
At least.
Yeah.
And so.
So there you have it, the Catarchic horoscope of Islam.
Yes.
Some scholars have said this is a late fabrication, ex eventu prophecy, as they say. But your reading of it is that it's a genuine reaction of Stephanos. From the period when Islam was this new thing on the scene, everyone in Constantinople is scrambling to make sense of what's happening. You know, the whole world order has changed. And he says, well, let's look to the stars. And then later someone came back and spruced it up to make it more historically accurate.
I believe that possibly the emperor Heraclius asked him to cast. I mean that naturally it was Epiphanius that asked, but it's sure that Heraclius was very much interested in this.
He would want to know anything about this new realm that was encroaching on Anatolia and conquering all his territory. He would have been asking all the astrologers, right? Like, tell me what's going to happen.
And we have to know that during Byzantine period, just like in late antiquity, the emperors had their astrologers.
And very soon, the Khalifa is also going to have his astrologers.
Yeah, sure.
And there's going to be a kind of arms race between different astrology factions.
Yeah.
Maria, at this stage, I would love to move on to the alchemical work of Stephanos. It survives in some manuscripts. We seem to have that sort of, you know, probably if Constantinople hadn't been quite so trashed by the Ottomans, we would have many more manuscripts of it, but it manages to find its way to Italy and into the sort of Western alchemical dossier. This is a text called On the Great and Sacred Art of Making Gold, Chrysopoeia. And I wonder if you can tell us about this work, give us a characterization of the alchemical theory involved, what is this work?
It's a work, it's in 9 lectures, and 9 lectures and one also letter to Theodorus. And, well, they are a series of lectures delivered in an audience in the court of Heraclius, of the Emperor Heraclius. The last lecture is addressed to the Emperor, dedicated to the Emperor. And as it is written, actually, he was present to this lecture. So in every lecture, Stephanos comments on selected passages from earlier alchemical texts. And each lecture begins and ends with a prayer, which means that it was also in an environment where they were also church officers. These lectures have a loose structure because Stephanos, wishing to show his many ideas and also knowledge, he tries to put all this and make a synthesis, trying to have all these in a logical sequence and fashion them in a whole. He says that this is the research method of the philosopher. I said that this is a new theory. No, he tries to unite all theories in a whole. It's not the common part of many theories, but all the theories with their contradictions also. And so sometimes there is a lack of clarity and logical sequence as he tries to synthesize all this. Also, it's clear that he is against those people who try to gain money from this art. And he says that they are ignorant and they think only on the needs of their belly. And they cannot understand that this art has nothing to do with this. It's very important that he says that the real practical philosopher must govern actually his passions. And he has to think upon perfection. And for this reason, I told you that the making of the stone of the philosophers, of this mystery of the philosophers, is the long way of the efforts of the philosopher to assimilation to God.
This is where we get into that spiritual aspect of alchemy, which...
Quite, a spiritual aspect, yes. As I told you, Stephanos' principles of practical philosophy are based on Damascus De Principiis, on the one and the many in the world, on the structure and transformation of matter. And there is a lecture that is actually treatise on the secret name of the philosopher's stone, which is exactly three times nine, and so it's a riddle there, and try to find the secret name.
Did you find it?
No way. In any case, it's there are many solutions, but actually his work is more philosophical than practical, and this is a reason that it was not very much appreciated by chemists, actually, pure chemists, as Berthelot, when he published the corpus of the Greek alchemists. He did not include Stephanos' work. But on the other hand, it's a work that is saved in many manuscripts. It's 53 manuscripts, 47 in Greek, two of Greek and Latin translation, and only six are earlier than the 16th century, and all others from 16th century to 19th century. We have manuscripts of the last century, 19th century. Why? Because it was really a philosophical work with all these ecumenical ideas.
Using the term ecumenical is very appropriate, but maybe not in the way people are used to thinking
ecumenical. It was a title in the Byzantine times, ecumenical teacher.
Right, like universal, sort of, everyone. This is a man who we can describe as successful courtier, consorting at Constantinople with the highest echelons of society, a pious religious man, presumably a pious Orthodox Christian, who has no problem synthesizing into that worldview Aristotle read through a very Platonist lens, right? He's reading things like Damascus's On First Principles, which is a tour de force of hardcore Parmenidean metaphysics, like the most hardcore you can get metaphysics. So he's an accomplished courtier, accomplished intellectual in this sort of Alexandrian tradition, but he's also an occult scientist whose work in alchemy specifically brings together, it's not like over here I'm doing my alchemy. It's like I'm doing my alchemy and it's part of this grand intellectual project I'm doing. It's all integrated. So there's astrology in there. There's medicine in there, but there's also metaphysics. There's also an appreciation of the philosophical reasons, philosophical stroke scientific reasons why things work. And he's much more concerned with that than he is with how to make a tincture of this or that. He's a philosophic alchemist.
Yeah.
All of this in one man.
Yeah, but I think it was natural that time. Education in Alexandria was something different than ours.
Yeah.
Philosophy was not separated from science. Because when we have the history of philosophy, that's also a major part of the history of science.
Yeah. So your work on Stephanos has gone into the details, and you basically argue that we have all these works attributed to this one man, Stephanos of Alexandria, sometimes called Stephanos the philosopher, sometimes called Stephanos of Athens, but this is one guy. We have reasonable data about his life from chroniclers and things like that. We can then supplement that data with some astronomical detective work, right? And really make a strong case that this man with those interests is at Constantinople in the reign of Heraclius. I don't think the science versus philosophy thing has given scholars so much trouble. I think what has really given people trouble is the Orthodox Christianity versus all this other stuff dichotomy. And I think that is a historical fallacy that Stephanos disproves, right? He and many others. In this period, you can be Orthodox, you can be at Constantinople at the heart of Orthodoxy and doing alchemy, doing astrology, and indeed you will be appreciated by the emperor for doing these things, by the Orthodox emperor, right? So because we have these church fathers who are saying astrology is evil and, you know, all these occult sciences are evil, people have tended to take that as reflecting what it was actually like to live in East Roman society, but it wasn't like that, right? That was the world they want, those hardcore church fanatics wanted. But the reality was there's no problem.
Yes, I could say, first of all, that in Alexandria until the 6th century, it was always possible to study astrology because it was the school of Olympiodorus, where the quadrivium was taught, and also an ancient commentary on Paul of Alexandria, which was a famous astrologer, 4th century AD, comes from a series of lectures delivered in the school of Olympiodorus, either by Olympiodorus or one of his disciples, who taught mathematics or astrology. And consequently, yeah, it was possible to Stephanos to study also astrology in the school of Olympiodorus, because he also the commentaries on Hippocrates, on Aristotle, as Stephanos of Athens or Alexandria, follow exactly the way of these commentaries as they were delivered in the school of Olympiodorus. So it was possible. On the other hand, we know very well that Roman emperors, I mean the early Byzantine period, and then emperors used astrologers. They had their own astrologers. And we can prove it by the great number of manuscripts, of astrological manuscripts, saved until now. And also, I could say it was always a conflict and a rivalry between the emperor and the patriarch. If the emperor was strong, the patriarch was not so strong. If the emperor was a weak man, then the patriarch had more power. And so sometimes it depends upon power. And we can see, for example, in the late Byzantine dynasties, Palaiologi, Komneni, Angeli, all these had great relations, good relations with astrology. And Manuel Komnenos, 12th century, which was a powerful emperor, he was a defender of astrology, and he addressed a letter to a monk of the Pantocrator monastery and argued that Constantine the Great, after consulting the best astrologer of his time, which was Valens.
Who actually wasn't of his time, but never mind that.
Yes, waited 14 years for the dedication, it's an inauguration of Constantinople. So early emperors and then also late emperors. And so we have so many manuscripts, because manuscripts, where were they written? They were some scriptoria, actually professionals, but also many of them in the monasteries. Why should we copy astrological manuscripts if they were not used?
Indeed. I mean, as the podcast progresses, we're also going to see quite a few magical manuscripts coming out of
monastic
contexts.
Also magical manuscripts.
Yeah. So incidentally, keen listeners who are interested in Manuel Komnenos' arguments about astrology and justifying its the fact that it's kosher based on the fact that Constantine himself consulted the great Wettius Valens in order to find a catarchic date for founding Constantinople, we'll want to listen to our special episode that we did on the talismanic Constantinople.
Yes, it was a monk, Manuel Glikos, and it was a debate between the emperor and the monk. And it's written.
Yeah.
It's written, it's a letter.
Yeah. I mean, that's wonderful because it shows us that although we don't have nearly as much medieval period writing as we would like from Constantinople, because we know there was so much more that has been lost, there was an enormous amount of continuity. These are people who never forgot how to read Greek. They still had Plato lying around. They still had Aristotle. They had mountains and mountains of literature stretching back all the way to Homer, and also including the whole Christian, post-Christian era. They had an enormous library, and they were reading it, you know? And it's a beautiful thing. Maria, your upcoming work on the apotelesmatikē of Stephanos.
Yeah, apotelesmatikē pragmatia means astrological teaching. Apotelesmatikos,
yeah.
What is the result actually of the influence of the tarot? Well, I very much hope to publish this work. I use Usenas Greek text. It was already critical. I don't like to make a critical edition because I think it's okay with Usener, but I am interested to have the translation of the Greek text and the most important, the notes.
Right.
The notes, which means that, especially for these caliphs, to identify what caliph and where did these copies, or I don't know, of the 9th century had his information. Actually, it's Theophanes, where I can use Theophanes' chronography and mention, for example, that this caliph should be possibly this one. And for his activity, we have this information from Theophanes' chronography, which is in accordance with what is written in this part of the horoscope, something like that.
So we already have from your pen Stephanos von Alexandria und sein alchemistische Werk, which is the monograph study translation note annotation of the gold-making text. And we can look forward to a similar work on his Apotelesmatikē Pragmatēa, his astrological work, which contains the famous horoscope of Islam and so much else to interest us. So we look forward to that coming out.
First, it's important to work. I very much hope to have the energy and force to work.
God willing, God yes. willing. Maria Papathanasiou, thank you so much for all the work you've done bringing the amazingness of Stephanos. And till we speak again, stay esoteric.